Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Bottled in China. I'm your host, Emily Steckenborn, and this is the podcast where we talk about wine, food, beer, and so much more happening from halfway around the world. Well, today we're not going to be talking about wine, but we are going to be taking a leap forward and discussing crickets and insects as an alternative and sustainable food solution. That's right. So we've got to ask ourselves, you know, can our current food system successfully carry the weight of an ever-increasing hungry population? Or are we limiting ourselves to sourcing protein from only meat? And what are other sustainable protein solutions available for us? Well, today we speak with Kate's daughter, the inspiration behind Orchestra Provisions. Kate holds a Master of Science in Nutrition and created a line of protein-packed seasoning spices called Orchestra Provisions. So I'm going to give you a quick fun fact before we get started on this podcast. Did you know that 1 ounce of cricket powder boosts 19 grams of protein? So only 1 ounce with 19 grams. Think about it. One egg has 6 grams of protein. Not only that, but that same amount of cricket powder also provides 10% of daily recommendation of iron, 3 grams of fiber, and tons of healthy fatty acids. So, you know, we got to take that into consideration. And I'm really excited about this podcast because it opens up your mind to the new possibilities of a sustainable food system. All right, everybody, don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Bottled in China. And if you love this podcast, share it. I'm going to make sure to shout that out. If you put it on your Instagram stories and you tag me, I'll make sure to reshare. And you can also click 5 stars on iTunes if you love this podcast. Let's get started. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another episode. Kate, I'm excited to talk to you. This is the first time we cover any topic like this. So first off, welcome to the episode.
Thank you. And thank you for having me.
I'm super excited because, of course, probably not a lot of people have kind of ventured into, I'm going to try to say this correctly, entomophagy.
Entomophagy.
So my first question is, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you founded Orchestra Provisions?
Yeah. In my studies, I got a master's in the science of nutrition. And at one point, I was kind of studying iron deficiency anemia. And I came across some indigenous tribe in Zimbabwe who are mostly vegetarian, but don't have very high rates of iron deficiency anemia, which is a pretty common problem for vegetarians to come across. I found that most likely this is because they eat mopani worms, which are really high in heme iron, which is highly absorbable in the gut versus, say the iron that's non-heme coming from lentils. You're going to excrete about 50% of that. Through this research, I found a lot of stuff happening in this space, and I found that insect protein is actually a traditional staple in most cultures closer to the equator. So it's kind of a normal food tradition in many, many cultures worldwide. This was very interesting to me because along the same line, I was seeing not only are insects, you know, really good for the human nutritionally, but they're very sustainable. And I kind of got obsessed with this idea and trying to figure out how I could make this a normal practice for the rest of the world's cultures that don't find it normal.
Why is it that we haven't looked at insects as alternative protein or sources of protein and vitamins? Is it just a cult? Have we been doing that before and then we stopped because the way that we were eating and then the Industrial Revolution? Is there something that ties us back to eating insects, or is it just never was in our practice?
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of Native Americans, if we're speaking about the United States area or the Americas, were absolutely eating and foraging for insect protein. It's generally going to be Caucasian people. And there are a few theories out there, that a couple of which I think make a lot of sense to me. But of course, it's out for debate. And it's a good discussion to have to explore where this aversion came from so that we can kind of move past it. One of the things that makes plenty of sense is that when you're foraging for food and hunting, and nomadic hunter-gatherer style, things are more survival. So at that time, when people started to travel away from the equator, be it north or south, all of a sudden you don't have as much insect protein to depend on year-round. So sure, you're going more for seal fat and fish and reindeer. And insects will come about seasonally when the sun comes out in big hatches, but they're not just out and about all of the time. So it makes a lot of sense to me that in climates where insects aren't around all of the time, you're just not going to be eating them as much. Another interesting theory has to do kind of with some texts that have been dug up, Christopher Columbus coming over to the Americas and potentially his device of othering of indigenous people. He was telling, you know, the people that he was conquesting with that these people eat insects, you know, they're below us, they're less than. And this kind of creates this attitude that I see, it's pervasive in our culture. Ew, gross, you know, insect protein. And sometimes when I explain why I'm doing it, even people will get on board with how smart it is, but yeah, not till I have to, or I'm not poor. And I really couldn't agree less with that perspective and find it a bit ignorant. But yeah, you know, those are kind of two theories that make a lot of sense to me. And it's interesting when you talk about bugs, right? We've even called them, labeled them bugs, like pests. So it's an aversion that's a hard one to move past. You know, we're working a lot with behavioral modification here.
Right. You know, it is interesting that you say that because, you know, the first time I came to China, when you go to the Beijing night market or you go to Guangzhou night market, you'll see that they have, like, you know, different crickets or stuff on sticks. And it's, people eat them because it's more of a novelty and it's kind of more of a dare, but they don't really look at that as something to incorporate in their diets, which I find is very interesting because now we're starting to see people evolve and be a little bit more open-minded and explore the health benefits and also environmental benefits of eating insects and incorporating that in our diet. So I want to ask you, what are some, I know you mentioned iron, but what are some other things, nutritional value that you have within crickets or different insects?
Yeah, and I like that you say different insects as well. One of the attractive things about insect protein is each insect species is going to have a different nutritional profile. So, say beetles have really high levels of essential fatty acids, including omega-3s, which we know to be anti-inflammatory in the body. Worms are going to be really, really high in protein. So all the different insects kind of offer something new. And we know that biodiversity is very important for the ecosystem, not monoculturing one thing really harshly, because lots of problems come along with that. So crickets in particular, this is what I'm using right now. And I have a great vision to incorporate all sorts of different insects in the future. I chose cricket protein because I think it's a little bit more approachable for people to wrap their heads around versus say something like a worm or a spider or even ants. I don't know why that would be. Maybe it's Jiminy Cricket, or perhaps they're just cute and they sound nice. But they're very rich in protein. Gram per gram, they're going to have more protein than beef, more calcium than milk, and more heme iron than spinach.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the prebiotic fiber, which is great for you know, your microbiome and your gut health, essential fatty acids, and then plenty of minerals as well. But those are going to be kind of the really mentionable things.
Right. And now you created a line of spices that deliver all this packed up with more flavor. Have you found that that's the ideal way to introduce, I hope I say this right again, entomophagy. I can't say it.
Entomophagy.
Entomophagy.
Took me a while. So, a little practice.
Right. Oh, I practiced this morning. I was like, I don't know if I'm going to get it, but I'm going to try. Is it the proper way to introduce entomophagy to everybody? Is that the right way? Or have you found that to be the easiest way? Or what are some of the ways that you've seen that that's kind of the first step people can get into exploring, you know, insects?
I think that it's a wonderful introduction. That's why I chose spice mixes. You know, the spice trade is the oldest human trade, and entomophagy, of course, is one of the oldest human food sources. So it was a natural marriage. It's a little more approachable because you can't see, taste, or smell, you know, the crickets. The spices do a wonderful job of covering that up. Crickets themselves are not an offensive taste. They're very non-abrasive. So they carry well in lots of different powders. And the idea here is to show people that insects can be ingredients. They don't have to be eaten whole, which fits our current food systems formula without any kind of chemicals or pesticides or anything like that, because it's still a whole food. So it's just powdered form. And the spices are, I thought, really smart because they don't pigeonhole the user into one specific use. You can use them multiple times a day in different recipes, and you use them just like you would any other seasoning. And most everybody that uses their kitchen is going to have some sort of a spice cabinet, whatever that looks like. So I felt like it doesn't require, you know, much direction, and people would already be familiar with how to use them.
Yeah, certainly. And then another question I had is, at the beginning, you mentioned something about vegetarian or vegan. Where does this fall in? Would it still be considered, if you are using these spices, with a vegetarian diet, or would it be considered as still meat? Like, where do we put this?
Highly controversial. Right. There are lots of people that are very interested. I've heard the word ento-vegan. I think what it boils down to is, what are your motivations for being a vegetarian or a vegan? You know, many of those people are motivated by environmental reasons and trying to find more sustainable ways of feeding themselves. And those people are very, very interested in cricket protein or insect protein because they can kind of fill a hole in their diet with this. It's like something that they've been trying to figure out, a problem. So it's a solution for many people. If you know you're a vegetarian or vegan because you don't want to harm an animal, obviously you're harming even more of the crickets. It's been pointed out to me that now I'm a mass murderer.
Right. So there's just no way at this moment. But it obviously is a healthier choice, and not only a more sustainable choice if we look at that compared to meat or even dairy. I mean, it definitely sounds like this. And also one of the things that I was reading about before was that a lot of people claim that insects may be one of the ways that we alleviate world hunger and malnourishment. Do you believe in that? Do you believe insects are the future to alleviating that?
Absolutely. That's one of my motivations, and I have to stay, you know, the course and stay focused, because I've heard people talk about the cricket products on the market today being bougie and not really having great impacts. But I think that misses the big point, that you can't just jump straight into insect protein. You have to change these behaviors slowly, you know, baby steps approach to normalizing this practice. But that is my big vision, is that we can feed billions of mouths with this protein in a way that's going to be eventually more cost efficient and more sustainable. And I'd like to back up a little bit and talk about the sustainability, but it's possible that insect protein is actually more sustainable than plant protein, which is huge right now. That is because insect protein doesn't really require a lot of water as say plant protein does. And there are cricket companies out there right now that are exploring human grade protein that these crickets are feeding off of organic waste from other industries. So organic waste being something like, you know, the extra fiber from cassava plant root industry. So a lot of the gluten-free products and flours, there's a part of the cassava that's going to be waste, but it's still perfectly good food for a cricket. And so you're not even actually growing cricket feed at that point. So this is a really exciting space for kind of using waste that's already out there to generate protein for humans. And another being arable land. Insects can be grown indoors and even in city centers to have a local protein source for urban cities. So they don't require a lot of acreage, and you can even have a cricket farm that goes upward versus outward.
Right. And do you see that? What are people's top concerns when they are trying your products for the first time and your spices? Do you feel like you need to do a lot of introduction, or are they already coming with an inquisitive nature? Like, who is the consumer of this, especially in the US?
You know, that's a very interesting study that I've been going through. It's kind of a roller coaster. Some people are angry with me. Some people are so ecstatic. You know, they're so happy. And what I've, at first I was kind of thinking, okay, it's moms, it's women. They're invested in the future. They want Mother Earth to be happy. They want their kids to be healthy. They're thinking forward. And then I realized it's not just women. It's all sorts of people that blow my mind. You know, you can't pass judgment on these people. What it really boils down to is an attitude. Are you open-minded, or are you a little bit harder to open your mind and more rooted in what you know?
Right.
So people who have that open mind, they're attracted to it. And I kind of try and focus my energy on those people because they get really excited and they spread that excitement. And I don't need to change people's minds that aren't going to change. It's an inefficient way to use my energy. So right. Yeah, you know, I think people are always going to be grossed out by it, but taking the people who are excited to spread the word and make this more mainstream is kind of the tactic.
Now, I think you were interviewed and there was a segment that was discussing that the edible insect market in Asia Pacific is growing, particularly out here in China. So what are some factors that you see from this growth, and how is it different than the US market?
Sure. You know, Asia is a large place with many different cultures, but so I don't want to lump everybody into the Asia group, but overall, Asia embraces insect protein historically, traditionally, and so it's not a foreign concept as it seems to be in the United States. So with that tradition and food tradition, you're not changing people's minds. It's already in there and it's already kind of, oh yes, I've seen this insect protein before. So I think that a lot of the work that I have to do here is already been done in China. I can only imagine with the population of China and the industry and the way that natural resources are diminishing and people are having to think about things like, you know, clean air and clean water, that there's a forward thinking attitude about how we're going to feed these billions of mouths. You know, I mean, I think the world, we're getting 7 billion people now, 3 billion of those people in China. So I really would love humans to change the way that they are, which is, in my opinion, wait until there's a problem and then find a solution. And I'm trying to help people to make those changes before they absolutely have to, but perhaps in China, that change is more imminent and that's some of those issues are more in your face.
Certainly. And I think we've even seen this given the current circumstances of COVID, where a lot of things like online meetings and, you know, online really wasn't a top priority for very traditional businesses. And then overnight, because they had to adapt to it, they went straight onto it and were very open-minded. So it's actually interesting because, just as you mentioned, until we're faced with the reality that we can no longer sustain ourselves in the practices we were doing for so long, that's when we realize we have no other alternative. And now we're happy to explore and happy to incorporate insects in our diet. But I hope it never comes to that point. I hope we don't have to make that radical decision. I hope it's something people can realize early on and be, as you mentioned, be more open-minded, because we can't continue the way that we're continuing. We can't continue to get more meat in our diets and eat like this and have so much, you know, unbalance in our lives. So hopefully that doesn't happen. But I love what you're doing, because it's raising awareness. It definitely is difficult to do, but it's raising awareness. And as you mentioned, people that are open-minded are going to gravitate towards it and want to explore that. And they're always at the beginning of it all.
Yes. And I can't move forward without mentioning the incredible power of meat and dairy industry and that lobbying power and the money behind, you know, that marketing and pushing those products out. So, you know, you've also got that to come up against.
Right. Now, one of these questions I think kind of sound a little bit, maybe naive. So excuse me when I ask this, but there was a big talk, of course, given the situation again, about the danger of eating raw meats or the danger of eating wild foods, I guess, or something that's not in our everyday dietary, I guess, your normal food chain. So in general, I mean, are there any dangers to eating raw insects, or are there any insects that are more dangerous if they're left raw or uncooked?
Not in the way that meat is at all. They're a very safe protein source. And when they are FDA, you know, certified, they go through a pretty strict process, and then they're dehydrated. They're either, you know, frozen or flash boiled, making them very safe. I would call for more regulation, because with more stringent regulation comes a lot of validity in insect protein as a food source. Mm-hmm. So I think that's going to be increasingly important moving forward. Of course, there are issues with mass agriculture of anything. And I think that you can have disease when you're not educated and about how those things can happen. But overall, way less risky than something like meat.
Right. And of course, my last question is, can you tell us about the different spices that you have? Like, what are some of the flavors and the different specialty curcuma seasonings that you offer?
Sure. So I have 9 flavors. Chai spice, which is kind of brunch inspired. It doesn't have Ooh. Sugar, but it's going to have more of kind of that sweet flavor. I like to use that in oatmeal or smoothies.
Oh my gosh. I was going to say pancakes.
yeah, totally. And especially for things like that don't have a lot of protein naturally. So, and Pico Grillo, which is going to be like a taco seasoning. I also just did a chili lime salt for Cinco de Mayo, which will join the ranks. A curry powder, za'atar, togarashi. Ooh, what am I missing? Cajun, a Himalayan sea salt, a Szechuan pepper.
And ooh, lovely.
I think that's going to be 8 of them, I hope. And then I also have a therapeutic line that is a little bit different idea, but I've got a Mayan cocoa that has reishi and chaga mushroom. You know, it's a little bit spicy. And that one actually has sugar. It's the only one that has sugar. It uses coconut sugar.
Now, for your therapeutic line, what inspired you for that one? What was behind that?
Yeah, so I want to kind of expand my product line. I don't want to just stay in the spice realm, but showing that these powders can be kind of the superfood additive. I think that it's sort of disarming to people who are skeptical about insect protein, and the therapeutic line is going to target kind of a different, maybe there's some overlap there, but a different demographic of people mm-hmm. that may not seek out insect protein naturally, but adding a little bit of protein to, say, a smoothie or just an afternoon beverage or a baking project would be a really cool way to get some added nutrition. So I actually designed this line in conjunction with an apothecary that requested something like this. And I thought, wow, that is really smart. And so
right.
I designed them for them, but of course they're my signature blend. So wow. And that includes also a golden milk. And you know, so the golden milk of course is like a really popular trend right now. And so I'm also trying to catch trends to make this more like mainstream, more right. acceptable and trendy for people.
Actually, I don't even know what is golden milk. Mm. So I'm definitely not on the trend. So what is it?
Yeah.
I think I just realized I've missed this train. Like, when did this even happen? I haven't heard of it.
So this is a traditional beverage in India, and it's going to be turmeric, black pepper. Usually I have my signature chai blend in it. So it has cardamom and ginger. It's kind of a warming beverage, and you put and you can bake with it. You can use it in your oatmeal as well. But traditionally in India, you're going to add those ingredients into milk of your choice, coconut milk or another milk, and maybe add some honey. And it's really tasty. I think that in England, with their kind of cultural melting pot, Starbucks picked it up, and then it sort of started becoming a trendy beverage. So, and then, yeah, I have 2 more. I have Green Vitality, which is kind of a, you could put that in milk, or it's like your superfood green smoothie powder. Has spirulina, matcha, nettle, lots of good stuff in there. And then an adaptogenic blend that is mostly beet. It also has ginger, orange peel, and some other good stuff in there. And that one actually might be my favorite, Crimson Root.
Wow. My gosh. I think because you've made this sound so delicious, I feel like then the protein, like especially the insects, for example, is the last thing I think about, right? And the first thing I think about are the flavors and all that. So it definitely has made me, even I've never tried crickets, I've never tried insects at all, but I would definitely now be interested to just experiment at least and see if it's something that I could slowly adapt to, because I do agree there's so many benefits from it, health and also environmental, that if we don't explore it, I think we would be doing a disservice for our future. Yes, so it's something that we all should consider. Yeah, my gosh. Well, listen, Kate, this has been an absolute pleasure having you. Thank you so much for sharing your insights and also sharing with us your story on how this all came about. It's really fascinating, and it's definitely the future.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. It's been a really good time.